Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elizabeth and Katie with the Best Ever You show, and we have a very special guest with us today. All of our guests are always special, but this one is near and dear to my heart because she's my pageant idol. This is on the phone with us today, we have actress Janice McQueen Ward. And Janice, my pageant
Hi,
idol.
Hi, how are you?
You're so funny, Janice. Elizabeth. Thanks for having me, Elizabeth and Katie. I really appreciate this, and I'm very humbled by you calling me your idol.
Oh, yeah.
I have to be a role mom.
Yeah, I've followed you for a really, really, really long time, so it's neat to have you on our show.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that more than you can know.
Yeah, so we're going to... we're going to talk about patios for a moment here because, Katie, we always talk a little bit about our personal lives before we go into our guests and everything, but Katie has a new patio. This is an exciting day.
Go for it.
Yes, this is a very exciting day. I have been trying to conceive of what are we going to do with the holes in our backyard. As you fall out, you came out of our garage and you'd literally fall into the ground. And finally, we just decided we would put a patio in, and it looks so good. So I've been, like, imagining this for years and years, and here it is. So I'm
Isn't
quite excited.
Fun?
Yeah.
Yes. It's all about it's the little things, isn't it? Sometimes they make your world right.
Yeah. You know, well, I think it's about the experience of having a vision of something you want to see happen, and being willing to wait until when it can happen, and then when it does, you're so excited. Which, Janice, reminds me of you running the marathon. I mean, this is really an exciting goal you're doing.
Oh, well, you've experienced the same thing yourself, so you know what it's like. And I will tell you this right now. I do not like to run. I'll be honest. So for those of you out there who think, I can't do this, I think, you know, if you ever have a goal that you set in mind, for me it was more about pushing the envelope and pushing the limits with my body, because I've always been a Pilates instructor, an aerobic instructor, have done pretty much and taught every type of class there is out there. And I ran when I was in college, and I thought, you know, why not? I mean, just because I'm getting older does not mean, if anything, I'm getting stronger, and yeah. I'm very physically fit, and my husband's a runner. So for me, it was about what can I do to enhance our relationship, and also it's a win-win. I get something from it as well, and my husband's been a runner his entire adult life. I mean, he's been running since he was 14, and so he started running marathons 2 years ago, and he finished the L.A. Marathon, and I was his supporter, you know, taking pictures and screaming and yelling and texting throughout the whole thing to make sure that he felt like he was pumped up, because I couldn't be there beside him. So I thought, you know, I want to be there beside him. So I started training. And for me, I wanted to be very realistic because I had not run since I was younger. And it's definitely a different discipline than teaching aerobics or Pilates or spin class and yoga and all of those things and walking. And I can walk forever, but running is a different discipline. So I started slowly, and I set myself a goal, which is what you were talking about in everything that we do, from fixing our homes to helping our kids make better grades in school to losing the last 5 pounds to entering a pageant to becoming an actress to running. Everything that we do, we have to set goals. So I started slowly increasing my mileage and was able to complete my first half marathon at the Long Beach Marathon last month, so I was real excited about that. So now I'm preparing for I'm not even preparing because I know that I can run. I run 14 miles very easily, doing the December Las Vegas Marathon, and then I am training for the Carmel and the L.A. Full Marathon. So please keep your fingers crossed that I can do that. So I'm excited.
Okay, I have a question from a very, very non-marathon girl.
Okay.
Can someone who can hardly run up their street and back, do you think, work up the endurance to be able to actually run a marathon?
Yes, and here is how.
I mean, do you think there's marathon people and non-marathon people? Is there like a marathon class or anything? Or?
Well, I think like in anything you have different variations, and everybody is different. And I think a lot of the marathon runners that you see out there have started when they were extremely young. You know, and if it's hindsight is 2020, we hear this all the time. And if I had known that I was going to do this when I was, let's say, 10 years of age, I would have started running then and continued with that with track and school and done more than I did in college and continued running because, again, it's so different than working out for an hour at your gym, even though that's really strenuous. It works our aerobic capacity in our bodies differently than what you do more interval training when you're at the gym because you have the rest periods. So for someone that's starting later in life and doing marathons, I'm past 40, is I started researching because I wanted to do it the correct way. I wanted to be safe, and I'm all about doing everything holistically and really taking care of myself. So my husband and I stumbled across this technique for running called the Galloway Method. And the Galloway Method, in short, basically means that you can run 4 minutes and then you walk fast for 1 minute. Then it's four, one, intervals. And then if you are exhausted, let's say you're running a full marathon, which I'll be doing that at the first part of next year, if you're near the end, usually you hit the wall around the 18th mile. And see, I'm just now working up to 18 miles and I'm fine. The only thing that hurts is my feet because I've worn high heels my entire life, so my feet hurt. But so at that wall is when you can, if you need to, you can do a one minute interval.
Yep.
And that
yep.
actually happened this past marathon with my husband at Long Beach Marathon. He had injured himself trying to do barefoot running earlier in the year. And so gained his strength back in running in his regular Newton shoes, which are forefront running shoes. He started getting a little bit of cramping just because of his injury. So he applied that method of one and one and was able to get through that wall between the 18th and 20th mile and then was able to run from mile, say, 22 to 26.2 and finish, which, because he had finished two other previous marathons. But that method will help people that are the non-marathon type runners or starting out and you think that you can't run a mile and you can't sprint down your street and you can't run in the neighborhood and you just absolutely hate it. I call it sanity. It's running with sanity. I know after four minutes I'm going to get a one-minute break that I can walk, and that allows me to finish with as much energy as I started. So when I finished my half marathon, I was fine. I was like, okay, I feel great. I actually could have run another 13.1 miles fairly easily because of that method.
Yeah, that was actually the method I used when I ran, and because
cool,
I called it trotting.
Yeah,
I trotted. I was one of the trotters at the end.
I don't know what I used. In this boot camp class I took about a year and a half ago, but I took a boot camp class, and on day one, the instructor said, okay, everybody, we're going to go run a mile. And I think my jaw dropped because I was not expecting that at all. And I think, cover your ears, Janice, I mean, I think it took me like 20 minutes to run.
Oh,
walk.
Shame on you.
Oh, it was awful. No, I think it was like, I really do, it was like 14. So it's at least, it still is not even a respectable number. I mean, my kids giggled. They're like, we can do it in 7 or 6 or what?
We can walk that fast, basically.
I'm terrible at running. So it's quite neat to see people achieve their dreams in running mode. I don't know. You know what, though? That does give me hope. So you walk, you run a minute, walk a minute?
You run for 4 minutes, and when I do my first for 4 minutes,
yeah.
And my first set is, because you don't have to, you do want to stretch a little bit, but you don't have to stretch a whole lot. The whole thing is just about preparation, not be too full, not have too full of a stomach, and have stretched a little bit and warmed up. And then I take the first two sets of 4 minutes of running, and I really sort of just trot or jog, and then I walk faster. And then by then my muscles are warmed up, especially since I'm a forefront runner, which means I don't use my heel at all when I'm running, and it keeps the impact off my body. So I'm running on the ball of my foot, which, again, wearing the high heels really helps. Let me tell you, so you girls out there, you're able to do it. If you can walk in high heels, you can run as a forefront runner. And this keeps the impact off of your body, which is important to me. I didn't want to feel the impact on my knees. And so I have these really great shoes. It's called Newton shoes. And it's really about the law of gravity, hence the name Newton. And your body wants to automatically lean forward, and it should when it's running. And so I do that. And then after the first interval or two intervals of the 4-1, 4-1, then I maintain a comfortable speed. I'm not trying to win any races, no pun intended, I want to finish. And I finished my first half marathon in 2 hours and 33 minutes, and that was with walking, you know, running and walking. And my walking pace was not fast. I really used that to catch my breath, grab some water, to make sure, since it was my first half marathon, I didn't know what to expect. So when I finished, I was like, wow, I could have actually run a lot faster. So my goal is to now increase my time so that, or decrease my time for the Las Vegas marathon and try to do it in 2 hours. And then my goal would be to complete a full marathon in under 5 hours. And I think for your first time,
yep,
that is an amazing
goal. You can
goal.
Do that.
Yeah.
You can do it. I did it. You can do it.
It's
4 hours
and
54 minutes.
Way to go. That's amazing. Very good. No, that's really good. That is really good because you're not supposed to run. You know, I mean, I would love to be able to finish a marathon in like 3 hours, but that's not my goal. My goal is the completion of it. That is because I'm the kind, I like to win. And so if I'm not going to win and get a medal and win $100,000 or whatever, then I'm just going to, I'm going to compete at the real person
race.
Explains a lot. Yeah. That tells you a lot about me. If I'm not winning, I'm not going to run fast. I told my honey, my husband laughingly, I said, if there was a crown given at the very end of this marathon, you would probably see me dashing to the finish line.
I was just going to say, that's what they need. They need to just put one of those sticks with like a dog running, put a stick with a crown
with
up at the end of it.
With a crown on the end of it, and I would run. I know I'd run really fast. Oh, my goodness. That's actually a good idea for a possible pageant. But anyway.
All right. So you've done all these amazing things aside from this even. I don't even know where to begin. I love it sort of when we go back to people when they were kids so we can understand how they got to be the adult they are today. So I was wondering if we could do that with you. Just take all the way back to Janice at age, you know, 4 or something. Pick a number. And what kind of kid were you?
I was the kid that when you went over to visit your friends or my parents had relatives and friends over, I was the one that turned on the music and got up on the table or went to the middle of the room and danced and sang and put on a show. So I guess I did want to be the center of attention, but more importantly is I wanted to entertain people. I was a natural performer from a very, very young age, and I lived in an extremely, extremely small town. And so there were no outlets for this entertainment inside of me. I mean, since I was born, I knew that I wanted to be a performer. So my parents really were very, very protective, very loving, very just the best parents in the entire world. The only thing that they would not allow me to do that I wish they had of let me do was to go to the larger city to take lessons, to take dance lessons, to take voice lessons, to take dramatic classes, theater classes. And, you know, I've tried to do that for my son, bringing him to Los Angeles. And, you know, that's what I wanted as a child, is I wanted to be able to go to the big city and take classes, even if it were just in the summertime. But I was a typical, you know, small-town girl and doing the best I can, taking ballet classes and tap classes and being a little bit bored because I would learn it in 1 minute and have it down pat and, okay, let's learn the next dance. Well, the next dance is not till next season. I'm like, well, I already have this. Can we do something else? You know, I'm thinking this in my mind. And so I had that little bit of that entertainer ADD as a kid. And so I did a lot of my own. So I started taking up music because then I could practice as much as I want. I could learn as much as I want. So I was a flautist and a piano player as a child and really took upon myself to really practice the flute. I went to the School of the Arts, and I practiced 4 hours a day. I mean, I was one of those who I was just wanting to be in Carnegie Hall and wanted to perform as much as I could possibly do. So that was pretty much my childhood, was music and theater and Girl Scouts and church and, you know, all the things that you do in the small town and being the little girl that you are. But I didn't do pageants. I was not a pageant person until 17, believe it or not.
And at age 17, which what pageants did you start doing?
You know, it's so funny. You know, coaching and having been a pageant girl now and seeing young girls, there's so many great little girl pageants out there that I wish I had been afforded that opportunity. But at 17, while I guess I could have had the opportunity to do Junior Miss or Teen USA or one of those that are geared towards a teenager, I was always a very mature child and was always in the advanced classes. So at 17, I had my eye on the big crown. I wanted to be Miss America. So I was a junior in high school when I applied, and I was finally able to enter as soon as I turned 17, which I was just barely a senior in high school. And I entered and won the Miss Randolph County preliminary to Miss North Carolina, which is a Miss America preliminary, on my first try with about 25 girls in the pageant, all much, much older and more experienced than me, with the exception of a few. And it was very surreal. And I will tell you, and those of you who have won your first pageant, you're hooked after that. And it might have been better for me to not have won the first pageant and taught me to really work a little harder as a young adult, but I was just used to being the best at everything that I did at that age. And that is, of course, the small-town dilemma of someone who has, I guess, the ability to sing and dance and act and make A-plus grades in school is I was sort of the superstar. And so I won at 17. And, you know, to make a very long story short, is it was a great thing and it was a bad thing. I was hooked on pageants, which have been very much a part of my life, and I'm blessed for that. But being the beauty queen and senior in high school, probably not the greatest thing for my social life, honestly. I had a lot of jealous friends, and
aww,
I was quite a bit.
Yeah.
And boys were then afraid to ask me out. And I'm just Janice. I'm just me. I didn't change. I just happened to want to get a scholarship to my parents for school, and I wanted to sing and play my flute and perform, and that allowed me the opportunity to perform not only for the talent competition but throughout the entire year. So you can imagine, for me, that was like a little bit of the big city flair that I wanted so much my entire child life, you know?
Yeah, that sounds very similar in a way to me. I was in a teen magazine while I was in high school,
mm-hmm,
and no one was ever mean to me or anything. I mean, in fact, all my high school friends are in my Facebook. I love everybody.
Well, me too, yeah.
But I know. But, you know, there was this one day I was in the library, and I opened up the magazine that I was in because it was in there, and I was just looking around, and somebody had drawn a mustache on me and written across the top of it the B word. And I thought, wow, how could somebody do that? Because in my mind, if any other girl in the high school had won, I would be like practically framing it, going, good job, you know. And so it horrified me that someone would actually write that about me in there. And do you know what I mean? It was a real mm-hmm eye-opener to, wow, you're not as great as you think, or somebody doesn't think so at least, or
yeah,
something. It was very strange for me. And I think that moment on, I was very, probably very similar to you, where you it just wasn't the best move, I guess. I don't know.
No, you don't think about that. You really don't. And, you know, I was already, you know, the person who was, I mean, I'll be honest, I was a nerd. I mean, I was the person who went to the governor's school, which is for the gifted and talented, in high school. And I went to, you know, I was in all of the advanced classes. I was a sophomore with seniors in my classes. So I was already a little bit of a nerd. I was in a group of those outstanding students, and I was very grateful and blessed for that. But that, in addition to being in, you know, in sort of the glee club as well as the band and being the, you know, the lead flautist and piccolo player and wearing the marching band suit versus the cheerleading outfit, I was already sort of a borderline, she's pretty, but she sure is a nerd. And then winning a beauty contest, I thought would, I didn't do it for that reason, but I really thought it might give me a little popularity in school that I so much wanted, because I was the outgoing person. You know, in many pockets there was boys, but with girls definitely not so much. I was ostracized from all of the honors program, the beta clubs, because they were popularity contests in addition to your grades. So the teachers wanted me in, but the students would vote me out. So it was a very difficult lesson for me. And it's not that I'm trying to tell anyone out there, don't put your daughter in these, but it's really different when it's held at your high school.
Well,
and it is the contest to win. You just have to be careful.
I think in today's terms too, with, you know, back when we were kids, there was no internet. And so we think about if the internet would have existed, how bullied you would have been. And I wonder, even in some of the pageants we've been in as adults, the bullying even at the adult level is really
awful.
Profound. But I think to be out there in anything, whether it's a commercial, tell me what you think, to be out there in a movie or a commercial or a pageant or anything where you're visible, that you have to kind of grow a thick skin in a way, don't you?
You do. And it's something that I really do believe in fate, kismet, that things are meant to be. And I think it was a way for me to learn that early in life so that I would grow this thicker skin that I now have to have to survive with what I'm doing. So I guess it is a good thing, you know, and things, you know, do happen for a reason. I really do believe that God looks after us.
Absolutely. Katie's got that daughter.
Yeah, boy, I'm listening to you, and I'm also thinking I was all New England piccolo player, Janice. So much of what you were saying. We had parallel lives in many ways, but we didn't have pageants in the East. I mean, we really, where I was in Vermont, I don't think there was a pageant.
Yeah.
There
There's
may
not
have
as
been,
many
but nobody.
Up there.
No, it's not. And I have a daughter who's incredibly talented, does exactly what you just described. We were at a friend's house the other day, and there's always a beauty pageant, and there's always a performance, and she always sings, and she sings 24/7. I mean, this kid sings all the time. And I'm in that place of really wondering, you know, she takes dance classes and she takes piano and she takes all these things. And I know there are other moms out there facing this dilemma. What's enough? When's enough enough? And when do you say this kid has, she also just, you know, she's incredibly bright. And when do you say that, okay, it's time to focus on finding a school that has all that? Because it really eats up her life when she has to go to class after class after class after school. And so I keep wondering when and if she is serious about continuing, because she just loves it, every part of it, like you described. You know, when do you say, well, you know, if you really do love it, maybe we need to find a way for you to do it within school? And I don't know, I'm kind of at that place. So I'd love your thoughts on anything like that, because we just don't have the pageant thing. So,
well, it's tough. You know, it depends on where you are. Where I live, the School of the Arts was in Winston-Salem, and I lived in a small town called Ashboro outside of Greensboro. And the only opportunity for me to take all that and consolidate it into a school environment was to go to School of Arts. So I did that for one. I did a summer semester.
Yeah,
I did it for a summer semester, and they wanted me to attend school so much, so they said that I didn't even have to follow the protocol for auditioning. I just needed to show up at the audition spot, and I was in. I was gifted, so I was very lucky. I was very gifted. But I, as, I guess, a middle schooler at that time, chose not to go, mainly because it seemed like I made my own decisions. From what I remember, I seemed to make my own decisions about everything. At that point, when it came to education, I was telling my parents that I really feel it's important for me to be in a more academic environment, because I was that student that also enjoyed philosophy and psychology and you know, math, or at least some math, definitely not calculus or trigonometry, but I really enjoyed algebra and statistics. And so I wanted that opportunity, and I really wanted to make it a go. I really believed in I was going to try to socially integrate, because, you know, now I feel like I am who I am because of going through that. You know, if I could go back, I would have loved to have attended at least for like 1 year. I was just disappointed, and I'm sure it's changed since then, the academics academia of a school was not as high of a level as the arts, which were superior, just the best of the best of the best. So if you've got a school in your area that encompasses the academic part of it as well as the artistic part of it, then go for it. As long as, and this is very important, I think, for all children, to make sure they're comfortable with the change that it may make in their friends. When I moved my son out here, I had to make sure, you know, he was cool, and it broke my heart. It really broke my heart to change, even though I knew that we'd stayed in North Carolina, we would have changed schools anyhow because I wanted him to go to a particular private school. So you have to think about that. But as she gets older, how old is your daughter now?
She's 8, and I actually am applying for a job in another state. So I'm in that dilemma place of taking her away.
Same exact age, It's a good age because they're very adaptable, but it's also hard because they really form great friendships at that age, too. But,
so I'd like
no matter what you do, you guys just, you know, I'm sorry, you just have to ask. I think it's good to ask her and get her opinion at that age, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
So I was wondering, Janice, if we could talk a little bit about the platforms and so forth that you support. Pretty much, I think it's all the time. I know for sure it's when you hold a title, but I think they're part of part of you now, no matter what. I was wondering if you could talk about your involvement with the various lung cancer and lung association programs.
I'd be more than happy to. And first and foremost, I do like to put out there that I think that it's wonderful to have a platform for a pageant. I think it's even more wonderful if you have a platform for your life, if you are involved in community involvement, no matter if that's just a small amount or a large amount on the scale of what I do, or I feel like that I do or I try to do. And I really believe that it's just important to give back. And if you can take that beyond the pageant world and make it not just the reason why you do a pageant or because you have to do a pageant, and it is part of your life, it will enrich you to a different level. My platform is one that has, and you've heard this term many times, it sort of chose me, and it did, because my mother passed away from lung cancer back in 1996, and 14 years ago, I couldn't tell you anything about lung cancer. I had experienced cancer some in my family. My aunt had died of melanoma, but primarily I didn't know much about it, except that I volunteered a little bit here and there with the American Cancer Society and different organizations, you know, probably because I had always been part of the community, much in part because I was involved through church and through becoming Miss Randolph County and other little small festival titles that I held, because that is part of your year as being in the community. So in 96, my mother was diagnosed, and it was a very bittersweet weekend because it was also the weekend that one of my very best friends was getting married. And I got the phone call, and my aunt said they thought my mother had a stroke because she had fallen and lost the ability to use anything on the left side of her body. So I drove from Florida, at the time was where we were living, up to North Carolina, and walked in, and it did look as if my mother had a stroke, but what we later found that day was the lung cancer was stage 4, non-small lung cancer, which means that it went from her lungs and it spread to her brain, which is one of the most predominant areas for it to spread. And usually that is a blessing in disguise because it's fast, it's swift. And let me tell you, it was fast. It was 6.5 weeks. So we fought it the best we could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how my husband's mother passed away as well. The exact same scenario. She fell on the stairs and just couldn't move. And then they discovered lung cancer, and then it had spread to her brain. And he feels so bad to this day, which I always tell him, you know, I don't think it's your fault, but he feels bad because as a child he purchased cigarettes for her. And I'm like, oh, boy, you know, I don't think she's got that because you bought cigarettes for her. But was your mom a smoker?
She had been, she smoked when she was younger, yes. And, you know, I used to get angry when people would ask me that question.
I know.
Because it's a stigma that as an advocate, we fight that stigma every single day.
Where I'm going to go.
But I no longer get angry. Yeah, I no longer get angry because it is the number one cause of any cancer, especially lung cancer. And my mother did not enjoy smoking. She started very, very young because it was the in thing to do at the time. And, you know, her mother smoked, her sister smoked, her boyfriend smoked, her friend smoked, and everybody smoked. They didn't have the warnings at that time. So she started, and the next thing you know, she was addicted to it, unfortunately. And when the doctor pretty much gave her the ultimatum, which was probably about 20 years ago, she quit cold turkey because the mother was a very strong woman. She quit cold turkey. She started taking better care of herself and walking every single day. And, you know, I've always been involved in been athletic and teaching classes and running and doing things that I did. I wasn't in school sports, but I was my own. I did my own activity. I lifted weights and taught from the time I was in high school. So we would work out when I would be home, and you play the blame game. I recognized the fact that she had limited lung capacity, and I always thought that was because of the fact that her lungs were healing and she was older. And you know what I know now is anything like that can be a visible sign that you need to get an X-ray. And I'm very excited to say that they finally have research out there that proves that, especially in older adults, 55 and older, that X-rays and CT scans can help find lung cancer and find it in early stages, which can save your life. And at the time, my mother was doing X-rays every 6 months, but to me, that just is not enough. You don't catch everything on an X-ray. My own personal philosophy is that if you have history of smoking, if you live in a highly polluted area such as New York, Los Angeles, if you've had exposure to anything that is a carcinogen, which we all do, but there are areas that have higher levels of radon, higher levels of Agent Orange, or maybe you're a veteran, or you have it in your family. Like, for example, my mother having had lung cancer. Heredity does play a part. We don't know exactly what. That's what we're hoping research dollars will help us find. But anything like that, that's a history whatsoever of carcinogens or family history, I think you need to ask for a CT scan. It's just they're not covered for insurance. They're not very expensive, but, you know, I think that's something that you have to do. And I'm getting my very first CT scan this year because I feel that because of my family history, even though I've never smoked, I just think it's important to make sure that I'm okay because there may be genetically something in my makeup that would, you know, keep me or allow me to be a little bit more cancer-friendly. I hate to say it that way, but that's a possibility. It runs in your family. I've met many people that their grandparent had lung cancer, their parent had lung cancer, and now, you know, they're young, but I always tell them you need to constantly make sure that you're checking yourself and letting your doctor know that you have this history. You have to be your own advocate. So I've been fighting the fight for 14 years. She died, we found out at the end of March, and she died May 14th. And, you know, I have fought that fight ever since. And there weren't very many organizations around at the time. There really weren't any except the American Cancer Society. And it's such a large community that it was hard to get that grief help that I needed and those answers that I needed. And so I'm very honored that for anyone out there that is going through anything like this, that's dealing with diseases of the lung or cancers of the lung, no matter what they are, there's some great organizations. I'm involved with Lung Cancer Foundation, which is based in San Francisco, lungcancerfoundation.org, and nationallungcancerpartnership.org. And they're based in Madison, Wisconsin. And there's also another really great alliance, Lung Cancer Alliance. They're based in Washington, D.C. All three are amazing. But if you want someone to really embrace you and on more of an advocacy level, it's Lung Cancer Foundation and National Lung Cancer Partnership, both wonderful organizations. The alliance really works a lot with politics and lobbying, and hence the reason being in D.C. So I highly recommend those.
Oh, sorry. We have a caller, and I don't have the ability to have a producer screen calls ahead of them coming on the air. Would you like to accept the call?
Of course.
Okay. Hello, did you have a question for Janice? Okay, I don't think so. I think maybe they might be just calling in to listen. I'll see. Okay.
I'll ask them again in a few minutes because she sounded like she was
okay.
doing something else while she was waiting, because I've had her waiting here for a little bit. So it was that I have a question about pageants, I guess. And, Katie, you're kind of quiet.
Sure.
Did you have any questions? Or I have a question
about
your
loss, too.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
No, I said I'm sorry for the I know that I cut someone off there. I don't know if it was Katie or Elizabeth that had the experience with the lung cancer. So I definitely find every day that I meet people that have this attachment in some way to the disease.
Oh.
So I am so sorry for that. It's sad.
Well,
yeah,
you know, one thing I can speak to, I worked at MD Anderson Cancer Center on the lung cancer unit for a while. And you spoke to the fact that it went very quickly. And so, you know, the medical social worker in me is just dying to ask this question. What do you think is really helpful that friends and neighbors can do to help you when you find out a loved one has been diagnosed with something like lung cancer? What can they do? What's helpful?
Well, the main thing they can do to be helpful is please don't ask that person if that person smoked. That's the main thing.
Okay.
Is we, you know, I mean, I hate to be blunt, but that's
mm-hmm.
the last thing that anyone wants to know. And the reason I know why people do it, and of course, I smiled and was very gracious. We do that because we think that if we don't smoke, and we ask that question, and the person had smoked, then we're safe.
Right.
And that's why
yep.
I don't want people to ask that
Good.
Question.
And that's why I asked you that.
It does not negate the possibility that you, as a person, could get lung cancer. Yes, smoking's the number one cause. It is not the only cause. So I don't want anyone to feel as if they can just, you know, it's over. I don't have to think about
it
anymore. I
right.
want everyone to have that on their mind, that I could potentially get this disease. It's the number one cancer killer in the entire world. And I don't mean by just a little bit. I mean, if you combine all the major cancers, you still cannot reach what lung cancer hits. And so that's the most important thing, is you can, as a neighbor, to be a friend, a family, is to not ask that question, because to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot think that you've escaped it. You have lungs. And
we
then,
have another
and
caller.
Then it's mainly being there for you.
Bandy being there
okay.
for you, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Hello, would you like to ask Janice a question?
Sure. This is Dave from Ask Deb and Dave.
Oh, hey, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. We're live
hey,
with
Dave.
Janice McLean Ward.
How are you?
Hey,
checking
hey,
in,
how
calling
are
to
you?
Support you guys. Tell you I've been listening a little bit.
Hi, Dave.
Thank you.
Are you jumping all over the place in terms of categories, or are you category specific today?
We're talking live with Janice McLean Ward, who is an actress and former Mrs. United States, and she speaks throughout the country on behalf of lung cancer from losing her mom 14 years ago. And And I'm going to actually see if that other I'm going to see if the other caller is available now too.
Okay.
Hello, would you like to ask Janice a question? You're live on the air. Okay. I'm gonna cancel that one for good. they're not there. So Dave, did you have a question for Janice?
Well, I did, but it's kind of a celebrity question. Am I allowed to ask that?
Absolutely.
I'm
yeah.
be out of place here, because I know you're talking about a pretty serious subject.
No, we're fine. We're moving on to the other subjects as well. As you can tell, it's something I'm very passionate about. But there'll be links to on the blog to lung cancer if people wanted to know more about that and my involvement. So ask away, whatever you like to ask.
Well, actually, I could start with a cancer question, because I had a dad who was a cigarette smoker, and he smoked for, you know, like a typical guy in the war. He smoked in the Navy in the 1940s. And he did end up getting a cancer, which was not lung cancer. It was multiple myeloma. Is there any kind of a connection with smoking and a cancer like that, do you think?
Well, smoking in general is a carcinogen. It's a toxin that you put in your body. So, yes, smoking can cause any and every kind of disease out there, from heart disease to cancer of any type, because it's a carcinogen, it's a toxin in our bodies. So absolutely, you know, smoking is, I mean, I just believe that everyone should quit. I don't think that it's not good for your body, and anything that can cause your body to be acidic, toxic, can lead to cancer, because that's exactly what causes cancer.
That's
so,
pretty similar,
I mean, I hate
to say
that
with my mom.
Yeah, it's a contributing factor.
Yeah. Body chemistry really causes a lot of problems, and my mom is just having to go through this. She had, I'm going to probably say it wrong, leukoplakia or something like that, a form of...
Leukoplasia, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. The start of throat cancer, and she's not a smoker or anything, but she's always had just really bad acid problems. But my point is that smoking, whether you're a smoker or a non-smoker or anything, lung cancer is something that people just get. You don't have to be a smoker, and that's why initially I asked you that question. Hopefully you would train our listeners and readers, because we'll probably write about this as well, but to really understand that it's just because you don't smoke doesn't mean you're not going to get lung cancer. There's plenty of people out there
We just lost someone here in California that was a Berkeley student, Jill. And I forget her last name, forgive me. It's on the lungcancerfoundation.org site. I just went to a 5K in her honor.
Oh,
21 years old.
No,
are you talking about the
leukemia,
I
think.
Or someone else? Oh, okay.
Yeah, she died of lung cancer. She's 21 years of age, and she's an athlete, never smoked a day in her life. And then there's another sweet little girl. Her name is Gabby. She's 7 years old, and she has lung cancer. So you can't tell me that it's just from smoking.
Right.
You know, it's a very serious subject. It's a bit of a downer, I know, but the only reason I'm involved with it is because it has become such a passion now that I really want people to take notice that you've got to take care of yourself, and you can't point fingers. You know, you cannot point fingers at someone else and that means it's okay for you because you didn't smoke. I want everyone to be safe. If you've got lungs, I want you to be safe. So one of the reasons why I changed to a vegan diet many, many years ago was because I really wanted to decrease the toxicity in my body and the acidity in my body, take care of myself, because I want to be around for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. You know, it's hard. I mean, I don't want to have a sob story here because I hate that. I really like to look at the hope and the positivity, which was we are gaining so much knowledge and we're gaining funding and we're gaining support and people are finally getting to see it. And I have a commercial coming out on Monday that is supported by or funded by a law firm that helps individuals that have lung cancer. And the reason I did that was because it allows money to go to these people that need the money to get the right kind of help, and also for the money for research to the different organizations. So I'm excited about that because it will get the word out there. And people just need to realize that it's the number one cancer killer. So that's
okay.
You know, really all I need to say about that. I just want people to be educated and just to not ever put blame on anybody for anything. You know, let's look at the hope. Let's look at the positive side. Let's see how we can help. That's a better way of handling any situation.
Well, one thing I love about pageants is that they really do foster the ability to speak about what you're passionate about. And so for
Amen.
That, I'm sure that's been a great vehicle for you, especially for the past 14 years. I do have a question about pageants. So I'm going to shift gears completely.
Let's
go into the beauty of pageants because I know let's go on. I know that you're a wonderful pageant coach, and you've coached winner after winner after winner, and national winners too.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the people that have won? And really, when you coach, are you saying, okay, you need false eyelashes, you need your hair brown or blonde, or are you coaching what they say or how they walk? What is a pageant coach? What does that mean?
Well, I think everyone has a different reason and a different philosophy and a different way of coaching. Some coaches are interview coaches. Some coaches are bio and interview coaches. And some coaches are life coaches. I sort of encompass everything. And I work on the interview. I work on the style, the branding of the person. I work on I would say I'm more of a life coach in the regard of I work on someone's internal reason for why you're doing the pageant. I mean, it's all fine and good to tell someone, you know what, your hair, you really got to cut it, and that dress is awful on you. I'm very blunt. I will tell you if something's going to work or not, and extremely blunt, and I don't apologize for it. But I usually give color suggestions, and I'm not the kind to say do this or, you know, this way or the highway. I really like to work with someone for their own personal style so that they feel like they're comfortable and they are competing instead of me competing. You know what I mean? I don't want them to be a cookie-cutter version of anyone. So I really work hard to get to know the individual so that when she walks out on stage in a gown, in a swimsuit, in her interview suit, in fun fashion, it's a reflection of her personality. Most importantly is when we are making her choices for platform, if she doesn't already have a platform, or we are embellishing that platform to a point, I guess embellish is the wrong word, we're making it more visible to the national audience. I like to expand upon that and not just have it at a local level. I'm always pushing the girl to take it from the local level to the state, to the national level, even if it is just a local title, because ultimately that's where you're going, so why not set your sights on that? And I have the girls set individual goals for themselves for the pageant, as well as for the next year, for the next 5 years, and what they realistically want to see happen within their lives, so that they're soul searching and they're doing so much more than just getting out there because they have to. Because if they want to enter a pageant just to win that crown, and they're doing the platform just so they can do better at the pageant, then I try to persuade them to understand that they need to have more within their body, in their soul, in order to come across as authentic. So it's the authentic, the realness of that person that wins you over in interview. It is the real passion and the belief in a platform and the reason why you're doing that platform. And, you know, like someone like me, for example, let's say I were competing again. I know lung cancer is a very deep, dark subject. So I would have to, if I were giving someone that was in my shoes advice, I would say work on a 30 to 45 second elevator speech, as we call it. And it's a statement that explains very quickly what it's all about, what your goals are, so that you can remove your emotion away from it, because I have so many girls that will work with me and they start crying. And I say, it's not that, you know, crying, it does hurt you a little bit in an interview. I just don't want you to lose your strength. I want you to be positive so you can make a difference. So I work on that developing of that girl so that by the time she's ready for said pageant, she's grown as a person. So she is competing with herself. She's the best that she can be for not just that title, but when you win that title, you need to be able to do something with it. And you can't if you are only surreally and surface preparing. You have to prepare internally, deep, emotionally for that title.
Now, I know, Katie, your excuse me, your opinion of pageants has completely changed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like I said, I really wasn't exposed to pageants. And I think what I've learned from hearing more about them and people like yourselves, I mean, the two of you are very well-rounded, very, very worldly, very intuitive, very smart. I mean, there's just a whole lot of things about you both that just dispel the myth that we were taught about pageants as kids because we didn't have them, you know. And you two are both from a very different world than the world I come from in Vermont. You know, L.A. couldn't be further away from Vermont. You know, and when you're slugging around in L.L. Bean boots and 6 feet of snow, it's kind of hard to feel like you're in a pageant. You know, so women oftentimes where I came from, it was just not practical.
I was thinking of me going to Nationals in 2006, and I had, you know, I went into all of these girls were pretty much like perfect. I swear to God, and I must have had like 40 mosquito bites from living in Maine. all up and down my legs. I mean, I had so much, I had like welts, mosquito bites, and I'm like, you know, there's nothing I can do to avoid this. I got to go to Vegas, and there was a lot of makeup all over my legs because of mosquito bites. But just funny stuff like that is, you know, just, you go with, and it's humorous, I guess. There's, don't you think, Janice, that in every pageant, there's just, no matter how serious you want to be, that it's, there are things that are just really funny? There's an element of humor there.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. We get up, we get dressed in high heels and paint our faces and tease our hair and put on false eyelashes and fake nails and try to
and
fit in a dress
cutlets.
That's one size. I'm one of those that never really needed that, but yes, I get the whole chicken cutlet thing, and they do look like real chicken breasts. They're so funny. But the butt glue and all that stuff, my husband laughed at me, and, you know, all the things that you do, and, you know, and it's hilarious, the things that we have to do to look the way that we have to look, and that is the other part of it. I mean, there's that whole deep part of it that I feel is important to develop the individual to make her the best she can be, but then there's the other side of it that is, of course, the more fun subject. That is, you know, this is how your hair needs to look, and we need to get your hair makeup person. Your ad page has to look a certain way, and your bio needs to say, you know, certain things about yourself that stand out on the page, like preparing for a job interview, and you need to wear 5-inch high heels because you're short, like me. And you need to wear, you know, this, and you need to wear that. And then I sit in the audience, and I'm like anybody else, and I sit there, and I see the things that are done wrong. And it's amazing, you know, prime example, you know, our reigning Miss California USA, who's absolutely gorgeous, and she went to Miss USA, and don't know who told her to wear, like, 10-inch shoes, acrylic shoes, and her evening gown, but that's wrong. If you can't walk in 10-inch acrylic shoes, you just
there's
don't do
things
that.
That are mistakes. And,
they're mistakes that we all make.
Yeah.
Mental preparation, of course, is the most important thing that you need to do. And there's times that I've made those mistakes of not being mentally there because my mind was on bigger and deeper and broader things. And we all have that happen. But the little things like your swimsuit lining showing, and, you know, I can see your nipple on your side.
Yeah. Bad news if you can do that. Yeah.
Do you see your nipple?
I've always said this to anybody I've ever talked to about pageants, and I don't know why, but I must have it in my head from being older, I guess, but I don't ever think it's very smart to go to a national pageant with very much of a colored gown. It's got to be kind of, I always think it's got to be kind of white or neutral or some type of neutral where the gown isn't wearing you, you're wearing the gown. Or the gown,
right.
I don't know, but the gown's almost invisible on your body. You know, you can still see your face. And do you ever think that that's why not very many people win in red or black or different colors like that, or is it the gown itself? It's always such a discussion, evening gowns.
Mm-hmm. Evening gown really is about the individual. And the reason why you see so many girls win in white is because white is the highest percentage of gowns that's on stage. I think it's really all about finding the right gown for the girl and also having that objective opinion. It's hard to do that for yourself. Everyone needs that objective opinion like a coach. You have to have it. I'm sorry. Even the best of us, myself included, have to have someone say, no, you should not have worn that. I'm sorry. That just, there's things that you can wear that can really hurt you. For me, being a shorter girl, I'm only 5'4". There's certain gowns and certain outfits I should not wear, and that sometimes I really need the dress police to come into my house and say, absolutely not, you're not wearing that. And I'm usually pretty good, you know, about that, but I am definitely an expert when it comes to other people. I have a really good ability for style and color, and long gone are the days where you have to wear white in order to win. I just think it is the number one color that you see out there. I mean, look at the reigning Mrs. America, she won in a black dress.
Yeah.
Now, you do see white in the other, you know, international United States was white this year. If you look great in white, that is the safe choice.
Yeah.
I prefer white over nude or champagne. Why? you see so many variations of neuter champagne, and you really have to get the color right. It has to match your skin tone. You don't want it to be ashy looking on you, and it has to really fit. And it's just so hard. And you're beginning to see, I'm beginning to see a lot more of that color than white. I still prefer white over that. But then when it comes to colors, you've got to match your complexion. I think red is a very hot color right now, but you've got to have the complexion for it. And are you more of a blue red, or are you more of a warm red, an orange red? You need to know that. If you don't have the money for a coach, then get someone to take a picture of you in it. Pictures speak a million words, not just 1,000 words. They speak a million words. And if you can buy a Polaroid, get a Polaroid. Most stylists that I work with and know, that's the number one thing they say. Take an old Polaroid snapshot type camera with you everywhere you go. Take a picture of it on you before you buy it. And if it doesn't look good in that, you know what? Don't buy it, because that tells the truth. The camera tells the truth. Color is good. Blue is really hot right now. Get the right color, because there's variations of blue. I get a little tired of seeing turquoise and aqua, but it is a beautiful color if it looks right on the girl. Like, blondes can really wear it. But I'm a little tired of seeing redheads in that color. So try to think outside the box and get a variation in that hue. And they always do well. So,
good. That's great advice for people.
Yeah, don't be afraid of color. Color is in right now. It is in. So don't be afraid. Just get that opinion, the expert, that stylist. And it's not the person
What I like about that, also about color, it translates whether you've got an evening gown on or a suit on or a sweater on or really anything, too.
I agree.
It can be applied universally. It's very good advice. And taking pictures is good, too, so you can see what you look like in that outfit.
It's very,
or whatever.
It is very important. If you don't have someone to shop with you, which I do that as a coach, too, I shop with the girl when I have opportunity. And if I'm working long distance, like I do a lot, because I'm a well-known coach for the United States and America, is they send me photos. And I will say, don't buy anything until you send that photo. So that's important. You know, that is really important, because that picture doesn't lie, and I definitely won't. If you send me a photo, I will be honest with you. And, you know, I enjoy the shopping process. To me, getting the right wardrobe is so important, because then you can focus on other things and not worry about what you're wearing, and then you can love what you have on and feel confident, which is important.
So we have 3 minutes remaining.
Okay.
In this interview, and I was wondering if there was anything that you wanted to talk about that we haven't asked you.
Well, let's see.
And I know you had to go 20 minutes.
I know. I really need to go, but I think it's important. There's so many great things out there. The one thing that I did want to mention, that, you know, as a coach, I am very opinionated. However, you know, I really enjoy making the girl an individual and making her unique and helping her grow along the way. For those of you who don't know, I am the executive director and producer for the Mrs. California United States pageant here in California, and it is growing by leaps and bounds. And so you can contact through the blog if you're interested, if you're in the California area and you want to just come to the pageant, or if you want to be in the pageant, please contact me, because we really are a family. And I really believe in, as you can probably tell, I really believe in the whole kindred spirit of pageantry, and that women connect. My best friends are pageant girls, and that says a lot. If you don't have something that you're involved with in the community, get involved, whether the pageant requires it or not, because it would just make you grow as a person. And, you know, I just, as on a celebrity part, I know Dave was going to ask me something about that, is many people know that I'm a very distant cousin of Steve McQueen, and I'm blessed to have that last name and that family heritage, although it is distant. And I may be having a pilot come out soon called McQueen for a Day, so just keep looking for it.
Cool.
You never know.
Juicy information.
Yeah.
that's so wonderful. Well, you know, I really got to tell you, I appreciate you coming on our show, and you seriously are my pageant idol. I've watched you do everything. You and Shannon, I love you guys, but you are one
Shannon's
reason
one of my
why
former
even,
clients, as you know, so.
Yeah, I do. And
I'm
you
sorry.
Are, you specifically are the reason why I entered Mrs. Maine and went to Mrs. United States in an effort to, like, be like you. So it's very neat. You've always just had that influence on me. So it's very, It's an honor to talk to you today.
Janice, I really want to honor your work with the Lung Cancer and Lung Association and really embrace what your message is about lung cancer and just the general attitude of let's not blame people for their diseases, but let's support them and
support.
And really, that's what Best Ever You is about. It's about be your best self and forget the negativity.
Really,
so I really want to honor that and thank you.
Thank you. And it is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month, so take the opportunity to just research and take care of yourself. That's the most important thing. Take care of yourself and take care of others and love
each
other.
What's your website?
Go to JaniceMcQueen.com. I'm also on Facebook. And then you can go to CrownCharisma.com, which is my consulting company. And then, of course, MrsCaliforniaUnitedStates.com. You can find me on all of those channels. And on Facebook, if you friend me, I will definitely friend you back. And all my contacts are on there. Thank you, guys.
We're out of time. So thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. And have a great day, everyone.
Have a blessed
day.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.